Good morning. Had the youth group over to my house a couple weeks ago slash month ago. We talked about gluttony, and I told them that whatever they say, I'm going to use in a sermon. So it's not all their thoughts, but there's a couple of them in here. I thought I'd give them credit where it's due. So we're going to talk about gluttony this morning, and this sermon is not based on things that I've seen at fellowship meal or invite you to my house, and I thought you ate too much, so I'm going to hammer you with it. That's not what this sermon is based on. It is a fact that this is the holiday season. We just came through Thanksgiving and we're looking at Christmas, and there's a lot of good food in this time, and it's a lot of possibilities to overindulge. I'd say more of the motivation for this sermon is the lack that I've heard it addressed. I've heard in passing talk about gluttony, but I've never actually heard a sermon about gluttony. I've heard valid, I think, criticism that Mennonites will talk at length about many things, about we need to obey the Bible in this area, this area, this area, and then gluttony is something that actually is pretty practical. Let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about this. And I hear that criticism. Food is a part of our culture, whether we like it or not. I think it's a good thing that food is a part of our culture. Remember, I'd go down to Philly to market, and people will be like, oh, where's your farm? It's in Lancaster County. Ah, Lancaster County, that's near. What's the major attraction in Lancaster County? I didn't realize it was such an attraction until I was out of Lancaster County. Any guesses? Shady Maple. You're near Shady Maple. You're near Shady Maple, even up here. Oh yeah, I was in Lancaster before. The Amish, oh, they cook really good down there. I was down at Gap. So, okay, Gap's world famous. I didn't know. But food is a part of our culture, and I don't know that that is a bad thing. I don't know that that's a bad thing, but it is. Eating together is part of our culture. Good food is part of our culture. Fellowship is part of our culture. In a sense, the old term feasting is part of our culture. We don't think we have feasts. We just have people over and we eat food and have talk and have fun. It's a feast, okay? And that's not a bad thing. Feasting is not put in a horrible light in the Bible. But it is possible for those good things to take the wrong place. It's possible to have too much of a good thing. I'd like to start the sermon opening up by thinking about satisfaction. What is satisfaction? So you see lots of things have satisfaction guaranteed on it. From your cereal, to your tool, to your pillow. Satisfaction is guaranteed, or your money back, and the product back sometimes. I don't know if I've ever called somebody on that. But satisfaction is guaranteed. But what is this that they're guaranteeing? So they're guaranteeing satisfaction. Well, what is satisfaction? I looked up the definition, and this was one of them. Satisfaction is the contentment one feels when one has fulfilled a desire, need, or expectation. This product will meet your expectation. It will fill this desire. So these Cheerios are going to be just what you expected, and it's going to fulfill that. You'll be satisfied with what you get what you expect. So when is your need for food satisfied? So when you get what you expect, when you get what you need. I know I was at youth retreat when I was a youth. And this is part of my definition of satisfied. It connects. I was at youth retreat when I was a youth, and there was another table of youth guys that wanted to see how many plates of food they could eat. And there was guys that were putting away a ton of food, and one guy, he got stuck at three plates. He just couldn't do it. And he was dying. He just tried to keep shoveling in slowly, but it was going slower and slower. And other guys were at four or five. And I heard the advice that he gave them. The one guy was giving advice to the guy that wasn't so good. And, you're gonna hit a wall at three plates. You hit that wall, but you hit it too slow. I hit that wall full steam, and I smashed through that wall, and I kept on going. I don't know if that's good advice, but that wall is called time to be done. Okay? That is satisfaction. There's a wall there for a reason. Okay? I do not advocate having food eating contest, but the wall, and I would argue a little bit before the wall, is satisfaction. That is when you're satisfied eating. That is when you are done. God made us with a stomach that fills up. And you know, I don't think I need to define when you're full. You know when you're full. I would argue, this is my personal opinion, that you should be satisfied a little bit before you are stuffed. So you can question the definition. If I eat 20 peanut butter eggs, I'm not going to get full after 20 peanut butter eggs. But that is not showing self-control. I think 20 peanut butter eggs is still gluttony, even though it does not fall under my definition of full. We'll get that a little later. But the definition, you can evade my definition. So first thing I want to talk about, is food fuel or is food to be enjoyed? I know I used to think food equals fuel, and I've changed my mindset a little bit. But food is both. Food is both fuel and it is to be enjoyed. I was looking up an article on food, and food in the Bible, I was reading it, and on the sidebar there was a advertisement. Some of the advertisements on the Christian websites are interesting. It was the Apostle Diet. Don't eat food for pleasure. Cleanse the palate. Eat like the apostles. You'll be a new man in soul and spirit and body in 40 days or something. Trying to sell you on it. Don't eat food for pleasure. Like, food is a necessary evil. You gotta eat food, but don't eat it for pleasure. Don't enjoy it. Oh, is that really what God wants? Is food a necessary evil? If we go back to the Garden of Eden, God says in Genesis 1:29, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And then later, after the fall, in Genesis 9:3, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things. So God has given us meat and plants and fruit for food. Now, did God make anything bad? Or did God say everything was good? God made everything good. If God made it, that equals it's good. And who made food? God makes food. So if God makes food, I don't think it's too complex to say that God made something good. And food is good. The false prophets described in 1 Timothy 4, 3 and 5, they will say that it is wrong to be married and wrong to eat certain foods. But God created those foods to be eaten with thanks by faithful people who know the truth. Since everything God created is good, we should not reject any of it, but receive it with thanks. For we know that it is made acceptable by the word of God and prayer. So food is good. God created food. Marriage is good. God created marriage. He created mankind with an appetite. We don't need to get hungry again. God could have made us like plants, where we go out in the sun and get some water and we're good. God created us with a stomach that needs food to run. The desire for food comes from God. He created Adam and Eve that way, and He creates us this way. He created us with a desire for food, and He made food good. Food is not a necessary evil. Who made sugar sweet? Who made salt salty? That was God. God could have made everything taste exactly the same and everything tastes good, but God gave us variety. Who gave us our taste buds? Are taste buds necessary? Do we need taste buds? No. God created taste buds so we could enjoy food. We could have teeth and a stomach. Chomp down. Food is to be enjoyed. God designed our bodies to enjoy the food that we eat. Food is to be enjoyed. Ecclesiastes 9:7 says, go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. The NLT says, God approves of this. God approves when we eat thy bread with joy and drink thy wine with a merry heart. God approves of that. God is pleased when we enjoy what He created. Whether we enjoy the spouse He created for us, the mountains He created, the streams He created, the animals He created, the fish He created, the fruit He created, God is pleased when we enjoy His creation. I enjoy and people enjoy the things that I make. If I build a nice tile shower that is just perfect and my customer really enjoys it and thanks me, that makes me feel good. My wife is happy when I enjoy and let her know about the food that she makes. My daughter is happy when I enjoy the coloring that she cut, the page that she colors. We are designed a little bit like God. I think it makes God happy when we enjoy the many things that He has made. We are made in the image of God, and I think this is one area that we can see that. Now, God can make much better things than I can. When you look at Niagara Falls, wow, that's just the power of God, the majesty of God that's on display there makes all of our little things look small. I think God still is pleased when we enjoy the good things that He has made, and food being one of them. God created food, and I think He intends for us to enjoy it and to thank Him for it. 1 Timothy 4, I already read that section, to go back to 1 Timothy 4, but God created those foods to be eaten with thanks by faithful people who know the truth. So we appreciate praise for our work, right? I think that's a fairly human thing. We all appreciate what you do. Whether it doesn't matter what we do, whether it's teaching, whether it's hitting nails, whether it's changing diapers, making food, we each appreciate thankfulness. I think that's another way we're wired like God. We're made in the image of God. We're wired a little bit like Him. God also appreciates our thankfulness. I think He loves when we enjoy the things that He has made. He loves seeing us enjoy the good things He has given us. But He also loves to hear our thanks He loves when we acknowledge Him. When we eat a good meal, I don't think it's inappropriate to thank God for the crispy French fries and the juicy burger. I don't think that's a sacrilegious prayer. I think that is thanking God for what He has given you. We traditionally pray before meals, and I think that's a good tradition. I don't see it actually in the Bible. Besides, Jesus did pray for feeding the 5,000 and the Last Supper. He prayed a couple times before meals, but I don't see any commands to pray before meals. But I think that is a good tradition. I think it would be equally beneficial to pray after meals and to thank God for the good food. I think that would be a good tradition. But basically, how I want to end this section is I think that thankfulness and food should go hand in hand. We can just kind of chomp our food and forget about the God that made it and the God that designed us to enjoy it, because we don't need to enjoy food. God didn't need to design us that way. I wanted to be clear before I talk about gluttony that food is a good thing to be enjoyed. Food is not a bad thing, and boy, we just need to cut food out as much as we can. Food is made to be enjoyed, but we can go a little too far. Okay, now on to gluttony. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing. Food is good, but there is such a thing as too much. Proverbs 25:27 says, "It is not good to eat too much honey, nor is it honorable to search out matters that are too deep." Thought it was an interesting verse. It is not good to eat too much honey, nor is it honorable to search out matters that are too deep. The key thrust of this verse is not a honey prohibition. The key thrust of the verse is about seeking out things that are too deep. It's not good to be consumed with thinking on the deep matters of life. We're just not wired that way. Seeking out deep things is good, but too much of it is not good for you. Just like honey is good, but too much honey is not good for you. So the key thrust of the verse is not about honey, but I'm going to talk about it. The verse assumes that we know that eating too much honey is not good. Even back in the Bible, too many sweets isn't good, right? We still teach our kids that. I think an aspect of gluttony is eating too much of a good thing. You aren't going to be filled up with 25 lollipops. That's, as per my first definition of gluttony, 25 lollipops is not gluttony, because it doesn't fill you up. Yes, it is. Too much of a good thing is gluttony. Gluttony, so my first definition was for satisfaction. Gluttony, I would say, is a lack of self-control in regards to food. And this is not necessarily quantity-based. This is a lack of self-control in regards to food. You are eating too much. You are smashing through the wall that God has made for you. Smash through the wall and enjoy it as much as you can. Or you are just not eating very much, but you're just not having any self-control about it. So you have a bunch of fresh baked cookies on the counter. Just had it on Friday, a bunch of fresh cookies on the counter, nice and warm, walk by, pow, grab one. And then you figure out you need something else, and you're walking by again, so it seems a shame, pow, grab another one. Then you think up another excuse to walk by again, pow. how many cookies can you eat before it's gluttony? So that, I don't know that there's an answer to that one. But where is the line between gluttony and enjoyment? Okay, we're created to enjoy food. God made us that way. Well, is there a hard line for this? Like, the lines between 2 and 3, 6 and 7, 11 and 12. Like, where's the line? Where's the cookie line? I'm not wise enough or dumb enough to say where the line is. But the issue isn't really the numbers. The issue is mentality. The issue is not being able to say no. If you know you should stop and you find yourself just sucked back towards those cookies and you just can't not have another one, I think that can be gluttony. That's a lack of self-control, as per the definition. Another thing about gluttony is that this is not necessarily a fat person problem. Okay, I'm skinny, therefore I am not gluttonous. It's not true. That is just not reality. Now, if you're overweight, that can be an indicator. But there are the young men that were having the food eating contest were all skinny young men. Skinny young men can get away with it. As they get older and their metabolism slows down, then it starts to catch up. But gluttony is not a skinny person problem. So food is good and was created to be good and was created for us to enjoy, but this life is not about food. Matthew 6:25, and I recognize that this is talking about worry, but it also does mention food. A lot of the verses, a lot of times food is mentioned in the Bible as a reference. You know this about food, and this is the spiritual concept. Or, you know, food is just something we recognize. So a bunch of the time, I'm going to bring a spiritual concept in kind of backwards, if that made any sense. So this verse is about worry. Matthew 6:25. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? So life is more than food. Life is not just about the next meal. Oh, I'm looking forward to this great food, this snack. You can turn to 1 Corinthians 6:13. I'm not actually there so long, but if you want to, you may. 1 Corinthians 6:13. So this is a saying that used to be said back then. Meats for the belly and the belly for meats, but God shall destroy both it and them. Now the body is not for fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. So I'd like to look at that first saying, meats for the belly and the belly for meats. The rest of the passage goes into talking about sexual sin. Basically, God created the belly to eat, and God created food for the belly, and God created the belly for food. Therefore, God created my sexual desires for fornication, and fornication was for me. And that's false. That's what Paul is fighting against. But I think you can equally say the body is not for gluttony instead of fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. The body was not made just to eat. The body was made to serve the Lord. Just like the body was not made for fornication, the body was made for the Lord. We do need to eat for life to continue. Unfortunately, we can't just go on a food fast, or else we'll be dead. Okay, life. But our life is not about eating. We need to eat, but we don't live to eat. We need to eat if we want to live, but we do not live to eat. The desire to eat and drink are not negotiable desires. If we desire to hunt or fish or play sports or read or do that, we can cut all those things. We can't actually get rid of this one. We need to eat. But we can eat like our body is made for the Lord. Imagine that Jesus is sitting beside you at every meal, and he watches how you eat. He watches how you snack during the day. He watches everything. He watches you grab that extra chocolate bar you don't need. He watches every time you eat when you're not actually hungry. Imagine he's right there beside you. How pleased would he be at how much you are enjoying the food he has made? Would you be ashamed of the place food has taken in your life? Now, you don't really need to imagine, because God is right here beside us, and God does see everything we do. Sometimes we can forget that. Just imagine if he could see everything. He can. He does. God does see all the food that we eat and our attitudes. I think sometimes Jesus would, we'd be sitting by the counter. Imagine Jesus is staying with you beside the counter and the cookies are right there. I think sometimes Jesus might laugh at us and say, enjoy the cookie, okay? Just enjoy the cookie and eat cookies with you. I think there is a place to enjoy it. And some, I don't know that I'm necessarily on that end of the pendulum where I can't enjoy food. But I think that is a place we can get to. Nothing can compete with our desires from God, with our affections for God. I think we know this, and we know this as a, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Yes, we get that. But also the desires he gave us cannot compete with him. God has given us a lot of good desires for good things, and those desires cannot compete with God for our heart. We must not worship the created more than the creator. God has created lots of good things, food included, that can, due to the selfish nature, can rise to compete with him. Every good gift can rise up, whether it's enjoying the outdoors, whether it's enjoying this and that and the other thing, it can rise above. Example, I wrote a little story, and hopefully this does not describe us, but there's more truth here than I liked the first time I wrote it. So this is a story about Johnny and food rising above its place where it should. Johnny wakes up and eats a good breakfast of bacon and ham. Then Johnny goes to work, thinking about how good his eggs were. And speaking of good food, he pulls into the gas station at 8:30 and gets a donut and coffee to wash it down. Then he gets to work, sipping on his Monster every couple minutes to make him go faster. Then he goes to eat a much-anticipated lunch at 12 o'clock. Works hard that afternoon. So hard, in fact, that Johnny decides to treat himself to a quick chocolate bar or three at 2 o'clock. He gets done work at 5 o'clock and drives home, absentmindedly eating the Doritos he has on his front seat. Starving from the cold, hard day at work, he stuffs himself full of delicious supper, because he deserves it, worked hard, and goes and sits on the couch to read and digest. After the kids go to bed, Johnny remembers how good supper was and warms himself up a plate before he goes to bed. As he drifts off to sleep, Johnny wonders if his waffles will be better in the morning with whipped cream or peanut butter, or probably both. So that's the story of Johnny. What's wrong with the way Johnny's living? Is that fine? Is that a healthy way to live? I do want to point out there's nothing individually wrong that Johnny did. Johnny did nothing individually wrong. There's nothing wrong with drinking Monster during the day at work. I would question the health, but there's nothing morally wrong with that. And there's nothing morally wrong with eating a chocolate bar at work. But something's wrong there. Something's wrong with that picture. I have four things that are actually wrong with it. Number one, Johnny meditates on food all day. That's what's consuming Johnny's mind. He's thinking about the past food. He's thinking about the future food. He's meditating on his food. His consuming thought is the next meal or reliving the glories of the last one. I do want to temper that with, it is not wrong to look forward to a good meal. If you are hungry and you're coming home from work and you know what's waiting for you, it is not wrong to look forward to that. But when you're always thinking about food, and that's what controls your mindset, you're going a little too far there. Number two, Johnny has no self-control. When Johnny wants it, Johnny gets it. It's very easy to get food. We live in a society where you want food, it takes you 3 minutes to get food. Stop at the gas station. Unfortunately, that lack of self-control can spill into the rest of our lives, too. It doesn't just stop at food. When you always get whichever you want, when you want it, well, that spills over to your phone, spills over to time management, that spills over to all kinds of things in life, and vice versa. Number three, Johnny went to food to feel good. He did not go to Jesus. When he was happy, Johnny ate. When he was sad, Johnny ate. When he was tired, what was the solution? Eat. When he was cold, I need to eat. Johnny wanted food to meet his needs. Food was not designed to be our comfort. There are such things as comfort food, and that's okay, but food is not our comfort. That is Jesus. Number four, Johnny found his treasure in food, and that is where his heart was also. Johnny's treasure was food. That's what he lived for, that's what he longed for, and that's where his heart was. That's not where our heart should be. Food is a good thing, but food is not our treasure. So it's easy to pick on Johnny here, because Johnny's not here to defend himself. But how much like Johnny are we? Maybe not in every area, maybe just one or two areas. Johnny is not as far-fetched as he might seem. Look around at some of the people in town. It's phenomenal, the traffic that goes through Country Fair. And it's not wrong to go through Country Fair, but we are all a little bit like Johnny. Philippians 3:18 to 19 says, and this is again talking about false prophets, "For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and they glory in their shame, whose minds with minds set on earthly things." I don't think any of us want that to be a description of us, whose God is their belly. That sounds pathetic almost. You're really serving your stomach. You have no more self-control than that. We are called to worship Jesus, not our bellies. Jesus is the only thing that is worthy of our affection. We tend to think that Jesus looks, you know, "Thou shalt have no other idols," like this bad thing, that bad thing, that bad thing. The good things that he has given us can rise to be idols as well. The flesh can twist any good thing. Satan can twist any good thing he has given us. Food is good, but it is not worthy of our meditation. It's not worthy to take our thoughts and just spend all day thinking about supper. That's a wasted day. Supper is good, and you can think about supper for a little bit, all right? Especially the wives. I don't want to... Wives, you're allowed to meal plan, okay? I am not, not interested in hot dogs the next month, okay? But that is not worthy of a meditation all day long. Even meal planning is not worthy of a meditation all day long. Hot dogs aren't that bad. Hunting and fishing are good. Lots of things are good, but they are not worthy of our meditation all day long. So many good things can vie for our time and our thought life. They can fill our thoughts, but Jesus needs to be actually over all of them, food included. We don't really hear too much flack on food because we need it and it's good and God created it good, but it's not that good. It's not supposed to control our thoughts. There's a potential second definition of gluttony. This isn't a dictionary one, but potentially a second definition is when food competes with God for our hearts. Might not be incredible quantities of food, but when food is competing with God in importance for our time and our love, it might not look like gluttony, but I think God might not see it too much differently. We recognize the love of money, the love of power, the love of possessions as potential idols, but I think food deserves to go on that list as well, because it can get there. This next section is labeled Aaron's Two Cents, so this is not scripturally based. This is just some of my thoughts on gluttony. So take it for my two cents. When we eat a delicious meal or a delicious something, are we satisfied or do we want more? That dessert looks so delicious, you have some, and it was good, and you're full. Do you need more or not? Where's your heart? Is it possible to be satisfied and not stuffed at the same time? I think about fishing sometimes, and I don't know that my mentality is always that healthy when I fish. Am I satisfied when I don't catch fish? No, not really. I'd rather catch fish. Am I satisfied when I do catch fish? If I have 9 fish, I really want to have 10. If I have 15 fish, I really want to get to 20. When are you satisfied? Is there a point when you're eating where you're satisfied? Are we ever satisfied with the food we have eaten? A couple more questions. I don't necessarily have answers for these. How much is too much? Are seconds too much? Are thirds too much? Are fourths too much? Are big seconds too much? If you get big first, do you need to get little? You can. There's lots of different avenues. I don't know if there's a hard cut line. What is satisfied? When am I satisfied from eating? I'm satisfied if I can run a mile 20 miles after, 20 minutes after I eat. If I can get up from the table, that means I'm satisfied. And that means I didn't eat too much. What is cultural? Is it wrong to eat sweets between meals? Yes, that's wrong. Why? Because my mom told me it was. Is that something cultural? Is it actually wrong? Is it wrong to eat 4 cookies between lunch and supper? It's not morally wrong if you can not do it. That's just a question. Am I allowed to enjoy my food? If something was really delicious and it deserves getting seconds, can I get seconds? Just Aaron's two cents. I would love to add some clear-cut advice and say, you always stop at seconds. You should be comfortable to do 5 jumping jacks after every meal. That means you didn't eat too much. No sweets between meals. There's your lines. Bang, bang, bang. And that doesn't really matter. That's my lines. That's not actually my lines, sorry. But I do think that each one of us needs to evaluate what we have allowed food, the place we've allowed food to take in our lives. I think some people might need to enjoy food a little bit more. Food is not just fuel. God did make you to enjoy it. Some of us might actually have a healthy view of food, and this might just reinforce the position you take on food and how you teach your children about food. Some of us might need to change our habits. Maybe fasting might be a good way to keep food in its proper place. And some of us also, myself included, might be kind of a mixture of all three. There are some areas we're doing well, some areas we're not, some areas we need to actually enjoy food more. I do need to enjoy food, and I do need to be thankful for the way that He has designed us to enjoy food. But Jesus does need to be number one. When food starts to compete with Jesus, that's when we start to struggle with gluttony. When we try and blow through the wall and enjoy it too much, that just shows the position of our heart and our mind. So let us be people that are faithful in every area of life, food included. Let's pray. Dear God, I thank You for Your good gifts and for the gift of taste and the gift of food. Pray that we would love You and that You would be our bread. Thank You that You are the bread of life. Pray that we would be thankful people for the good gifts that You've given us, and that we would not love the gifts more than we love the giver. Thank You for Your grace for when we fail, and pray that we would honor You with our lives. Praise Your name. Amen.